Good evening, everybody. This is the Metaphysical Hour, and I'm Julia Cannon, and I've got Shonda here with me. And today is July the 24th. I almost said the 15th, which I don't know where that came from. So the 24th in 2015. And we have just finished the Transformation Conference. That was our 10th year. So we finished that one very successfully. I think it went very, very well.
Oh, yeah. It was wonderful.
It was fantastic. So, yay, another successful year. So now we'll be regrouping and starting for our next one. So that's what we do. We just finish one and get started on the next one. So wonderful. I want to give out the toll-free number so that if you want to call in with questions for our speaker tonight, that will be our guest tonight. That'll be wonderful. That number is 888-627-6008, 1-888-627-6008. And like I said, we just finished that, and that was fantastic. And so we'll be now planning our next events immediately. We'll just go ahead and talk about that a little bit. We have our classes coming up in Eureka Springs in September, and then we have a bunch of classes coming up in overseas. Yes. In October, and I'm not even thinking about that yet. Okay, and then all that's on the DoloresCannon.com site. Should we just leave it at that?
Yeah.
The QHHT classes, and then we're planning now for the TC and the UFO conferences, and we're working on that. We should have those all set within the next. We're giving ourselves a deadline within the next 2 weeks. The UFO conference is already set. It's always the second weekend in April. And then we're working on the TC dates right now. So we'll have those set within the next week. Let's say the next week, putting a deadline on ourselves. So stay tuned to the OzarkMT.com website. And our next guest will be one of the guests at one of the speakers at that conference. So we're very excited because his book is just released and very, very excited about it. Can't wait. And his name is James Nussbaumer. And just really cool story that you have, Jim.
Thank
welcome,
you.
Welcome to the show, Jim.
Thank you, Julia. It's been a pleasure to finally sit and chat with you.
Yes, I know. It's been a while coming.
Yes.
Yeah. I know last year, I'm trying to think, Mom, Dolores Cannon, was corresponding with you quite a bit, and it may have been, I'm trying to think how long ago it was that she was corresponding with you at first.
Yes.
And accepted the book. Do you remember when it was exactly? It seems like it was at least a year ago.
Oh, absolutely, Julia. And believe me, I've heard from other people how much your mother's passing has just shook the company and you people. And so I'm with you there on that. But to answer your question, I started writing in prison in 2007 in the normal barrage of rejections to publishers and agents over the years. And first of all, from prison, nobody, you know, would even want to touch you as a writer. So it happened in 2014, a year ago, about right now. Actually, it was June of 2014. I got a nice letter from Dolores saying that she wanted to know more. And I sent her more via regular U.S. mail. That's the only way of communicating from prison. And so it took maybe 30 days by the time she got back to me and said, we want to offer you this contract, and we think we have a place for you here. And that shook my world. And there, I can remember opening the letter and reading it and just really in tears, because after all those years, knowing what I was going after. And actually, I figured it would take until I got out of prison to land a good publisher who would take an interest in what I was working on. But so this meant that I was going to be able to walk out of prison with a contract under my belt with a great publisher like Ozark Mountain and just go to work. So, but Dolores had gotten back to me with some nice letters and such. And to be honest with you, really, you know, one thing led to another, and she kind of more or less said, be patient after I signed the contract and everything. And here it was March and of 15, and I had gotten out of prison, was released by a forgiving judge who came out of retirement to release me early, 2 years early, of a 10-year sentence for the foolish securities violation that was an terrible, harsh 10-year sentence that really was way in extremes. So anyways, that judge retired, another judge came in and released me early. So when I got out, I was so excited in early March of this past, a couple months back, you know. And I called the company. I wanted to speak to Shonda to hear her voice. I wanted to hear Nancy's voice. I even asked for you, but I wasn't able to get to you because you were busy. But I found out that Dolores had passed, and that was the first time I had found that out. And I was in shock myself. That shook me. And I don't know if it was Shonda or Nancy or somebody there. It could have been one of the other people, too, I talked to had said that real quick, well, maybe the reason that no one had said anything to you is we didn't want you to worry, you know, too much while I was in prison. I guess she had passed in October and all that time it went by.
Yeah.
So really, it was really good that I didn't know, because I would have sat there and probably maybe, you know, went into a little bit of a depression kind of thing, thinking, oh, you know, like you guys were feeling, because I was close to her from her letters to me, but not near what you are, what you people are. And I just wish I could have gotten the chance to meet her. But, you know, that's, I know her, but just physically we've never gotten to meet, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's sweet. You have handwritten letters from her. How many people can say that?
Oh, I do.
Yeah?
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do.
Uh-huh.
Well, let's go back a little bit. Let's go back and because one of the things we like to do is, you know, how see how you got into all of this, and let's go back and hear your story, because I think it's remarkable about how this happened.
Well, as far as
you
what
got into all of this.
As far as writing?
About how you got into all of this. Yeah, about how you got into writing this and everything.
Well,
got into this whole world of metaphysics. But, you know, because this wasn't your world the way I'm seeing it.
Well, in a way it always was, but I really didn't know it. But to start quickly, the first part I'll go through quickly. And when I was in college, I studied the literary field, and I started writing at a young age too, and was just really into writing stories about sports and everything as a normal boy that was into football, baseball, basketball, and all that growing up, and went to school and college after high school and decided I was going to, you know, write, and I never did, and I went into the military, and one thing led to another, and I got out of there and was... stumbled into the financial services business, and went on to securities licensing and, you know, trading stocks and securities and things like that. And that became my livelihood for 25 years. And it really was a place that I didn't want to be. But in that line of work, it requires motivation. So, you know, I was always into the self-help material and any of the recommendations that were, you know, read this to keep you motivated. Well, I ran into a couple famous authors. I don't know if it's okay to maybe I shouldn't mention their names here. It doesn't really matter. But, you know, they brought up this, kept bringing up this publication called A Course in Miracles and things I was reading. And I, you know, I just put it on the back burner and thinking, you know, I'm going to have to check this out. What is this Course in Miracles? And that's not like me to procrastinate, but I never did check it out. Well, And I would hear this on and on and on. So, you know, one thing led to another. And in 2007, I was indicted for a securities violation. I crossed some illegal lines to recoup some money that I had lost for clients and for myself, trying to bring the money back in a way that a prosecutor didn't like. And he made an example out of me with a judge, and I was sentenced to 10 years in prison. So while I was in prison, depressed and just terrible, in the first 6 months, I went into the library quickly and returned a book of one of my favorite authors. And by the way, in libraries in prison, they're secondhand books that are given to by libraries of the local community that, rather than throw them in the trash, they give them to a prison. So there's really not the most current books in a prison library. So I went to this philosophical area and I saw this ugly blue looking thick book on the shelf, and I pulled it off, and this is really the way it happened. It fell. I didn't really grab it. It fell down between my legs and my feet, and I picked it up to look at it, and faded gold lettering on it said A Course in Miracles. And I hugged this thing. I said, my God, is this what you are? It took me to come to prison. And I'm really making a long story short, because I was emotional, very emotional. I was just new to prison when I discovered this. And believe me, you know, the Bible is laying around everywhere in prison, you know, but A Course in Miracles is nowhere. No one even knows what it is about. In fact, that's the only copy that I've ever found in the whole 8 years I was in prison. So I just decided, I hugged this thing and I looked over my shoulder both ways to make sure no one was seeing that I was being emotional and loving this book, because if they find out that you're loving something, they want to steal it from you. And so I was very cautious of that. And so I just dove into it, and I made it a mission to dive into it because I knew that I was destined. This was for me. And I started writing, and I says, you know, I told to myself, I says, hey, my God, I got a book going here. And this was in 2008. Called a friend of mine on the outside, not called, but wrote him a letter. The only really communication in prison is handwritten letters. And so I says, hey, can you, you know, send me some material publishing things? I need to find a publisher. And one thing led to another. We researched and found out the writer's market. He sent it in to me. That was in 2008. And I started writing, and I researched the writer's market, finding out how to craft a really good query letter. I did that and perfected it over and over. And here we go to 2014, after him sending in the 2009 writer's market, 10 and 11, you know, it's a thick directory, kind of like a big bone book, telephone book, mm-hmm. really, with editors, publishers, and literary agents from around the world. And I was writing to publishers and agents throughout these years. And in 2014, I got a nice letter from Dolores that said, we like your material, we want to know more. And so here I am now, and I've got loads more material to go. But my material was handwritten into, since there's no computer in prison, once I realized, hey, I got books going here, and I really started to perfect this. You got to remember, from 2007 to 2015, that's a lot of years in prison. So I was writing on legal pads, and then I got this idea of, hey, I need composition journals. So what I would really do is I'd get everything, you know, etched, you know, sketched and scratched out, my hand scratching and all this on legal pad. Then I would transfer it very neatly handwritten into composition journals that my same friend that sent the writer's market in to me was able to send me these in. And that would be my equivalent of computer entry until I could get out of prison and get these into a computer and in manuscript form and ready to go. And so I've got loads of material, but this book here, The Master of Everything, I'm so proud of. It's so close to my heart because it tells the it's the pilot of everything to go forward and to that I've all the other material that I've got. But this book is just, people are telling me it's a page turner, but we just got to get the word out there. But it gives hope. actually, it's very powerful. It when people read it that got the traditional Christian mindset, they might get a little upset because it disrupts the ego in us all and brings us, tries to, it's the cloud cover is dissipating and the bright lights are shining through or the clear blue skies. And it's really, when you read the book from the copyright page to the end of the afterword, you go through clouds and storms, and in the end, when you become the master of everything, you're seeing clear blue skies. So maybe I should, I don't know if I should go on any further. Maybe there's something I should stop and let you ask me, because maybe I'm not covering everything.
You just go ahead. This is your show, and I want you to tell us and tell the listeners what you want them to know. You know, this is, what do you want them to know about your book? Because it's all, you know, it's, what did you write this book for?
Well,
what do you want them to know?
So many of us are in despair and, you know, just like I was, and we're searching, you know, we're in careers that we don't really want to be in. We're, you know, really think about it, generation upon generation has taught us things that really from the ego-based mind. And when I say the ego-based mind, I'm talking about the ego in us. There's really two, you know, the ego is just filled with illusion and fear in us. It's the part of us that, you know, fears to move forward and do what you really want to do because, well, I'm told I should do this you know, but that's not really what I want to do. Right before I was getting on the show, someone on Facebook had dropped a message to me. I heard the loud bleep, you know, that you get on Facebook. And believe me, I'm new to Facebook, too, because when I first went to prison, there was no Facebook and Twitter and all this. This all came out. So come the beginning of March, when I first got out of prison and I knew I was ready to dive into all this. I mean, all this stuff like Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn was just thrown right at me. And it was so overwhelmed that I'm still am. And, you know, you people here, you know, you gradually, stepped into this and like Skype. Whoa, how about this Skype thing? So anyways, this woman in near Toronto, Canada, sent me this message, and she saw my video thing on the Kevin Moore show, which was just last week and is now streaming on his show. But she left this nice quote in it to me, or I sent her a message back. And I said, you know, I'm going to quote you. And what she said was, she says, Jim, it's time here on Earth and universally when all that have been through too much like us, we're here to enlighten others from our lessons. And in that respect, we're here to help. And her name is Shelley. And really what she's saying is, you know, what, you know, your mother Dolores had, you know, had helped me. And she knew that and believed in, you know, where I was at in prison and writing all this material, that this thing was going to, these things were going to manifest. And I, you know, it's so, I'm working on the third book right now, and I've got a private editor that's helping me. And as I sit here and I input the data into the computer each morning, I'm like, I'm just in heaven because I'm typing these words in that I hand wrote while in prison that are almost perfect, but they're not perfect because handwriting, you know, is subject to change once you get into the computer and on Word and you got all the, you know, word check and spell check and all that kind of things to the editing there. And you know, I'm emailing chapters to her and she's emailing me back. So I, you know, what I want to tell people is what my book is about. It's how, you know, how to, it's never too late to turn things around, to transform, you know, transformation is everything because in transformation is change. And it's a lot about forgiving ourselves. And we all have the wrong meaning of forgiveness. We've been taught, you know, forgive, you know, well, we stand over someone and point the finger at them. Well, I forgive you. You know, you should be glad I'm forgiving you. No, you know, that's not forgiveness. forgiveness is creating miracles, really. And creating miracles and forgiveness are the same. Forgiveness means to look beyond the errors in thought that the ego-based mind sets in us. And the ego-based mind is nothing but illusion. It's the cloud cover that we live in, not the blue skies. So to forgive ourselves is to look beyond the errors in thoughts and go there to who we are beyond that cloud cover and live there and live there. Forget about what generations upon generations before us had taught us. And that is where our free will comes in. So many people live their lives in the cloud cover. I spent 25 years in a business that I did as a financial advisor that I did quite well at until I made my mistake that sent me to prison. But it was a business that I loathed. Not loved, I mean loathed, L-O-A-T-H-E-D, loathed, meaning I just was stuck there doing what I had to do. And so, you know, something came about to where I made those mistakes that sent me away. And harshly, I mean, you know, I had a terrible lawyer who was... 6 months after I went to prison, he was found dead in his backyard from a cocaine overdose. And I didn't know that he had these kind of problems when he was representing me. And, you know, basically I was sold down the river, and that's the way the legal system works. But I'm not blaming that. I mean, blaming what happened to me. But really, you know, when I look back and other people have said the same thing, hey, if you wouldn't have went away for 8 years, would you have all this material? Would you have this published book? Would you have met Dolores? No, I wouldn't have.
Exactly.
So, you know.
Right. It shifted your whole life course.
Yes, it did.
Mm-hmm. And that's probably what it took to get you off of that, out of that materialistic world, and get you completely over in this other direction.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And I always knew that I needed to transcend. You know, I would read all the self-help books, you know, that's transcend yourself and do what you want to do and all that. Well, I'm like, well, this is great reading this, but you know, how do you do that? But I'm trying to read this, you know, with the ego-based mind controlling me. At the same time, I'm thinking about the stock market closing this afternoon at 4 o'clock and these kind of things. And, you know, so in a day after day. And so you don't really, I wasn't really able to let go of all that. So really what happened was when I went to prison, I was stripped of everything that I was or that I thought that I was, stripped of everything. And I even wondered mm-hmm. if it was my dignity, but my dignity really never left me because it hung on. And it was an awful feeling, but I mean, I was stripped from everything. And when I was laying in a county jail waiting to be transported to prison, I knew I was going to start writing, but I didn't know what. And I knew that mm-hmm. I was going away for 10 years. I was like, how am I going to get through this 10 years? Well, I'm going to write. And that's what, so I didn't know what. And here, you know, 2-3 months, well, maybe 6 months later, once I got into prison, I stumbled into A Course in Miracles that I'd been searching for most of my adult life to no avail. And you know, it's funny because I even said to the librarian there, I says, hey, this, do you know what this is? This book, A Course in Miracles. She says, A Course in what? The whole time I was in prison, I did not run into another single copy of A Course in Miracles. There was one that was left on my bunk, but it was a working.
Yeah, tell about that story. I think that is so cool. Tell that story.
Well, what happened was the library copy was a torn, battered thing copy, just yellow stained nicotine from the smoke and the air and the prison system and everything. And so I returned this to the library and I says, you know, is there any way that I can maybe have this or anything like that? And she says, no, put it back on a shelf. So it was like a couple of days later, I'm like, and there was a rule. You couldn't go check out the book once you returned it for another week or something like that. So it was a couple of days later, I come back and I moved to another area in the prison system or a more quieter place for seniors age 35 and over. And I was 50 at the time. And so I moved to this, and everything's double bunked in prison and 30 inches apart from each other. So I'm at this new bunk area that I'm being moved to, and thank God I got to this senior area. But here it's, you know, it's age 35 and over, and there's this dusty old cabinet, and there's this rag on top of this book, and I pull the cover off this book, and here I'm like, I mean, I'm really shaken because prison is very emotional, and you're always looking over your shoulder all the time. I'm like, wait a minute, this can't be right. A Course in Miracles? Another copy of this? This is not right. And I'm like, this has got to be some kind of joke. And I looked at, this was a brand, not brand new, but new. I mean, not new, but not worn and torn. And I, the guy that I was, my bunkie, my new bunkie, I say, do you know anything about this? He says, well, the guy that was here before, he just put that rag over that and had his girlfriend's picture sitting on top of it. He uses it as a little bit of a shelf. And I says, come on, you know anything about this? And no. He says, dude, I don't know anything about it. And so I raised it up in this crowded area. I said, does anybody know anything about this book? Because if nobody did, I was going to claim it. And my new bunkie, he says, dude, I'm telling you, keep it. It's yours. Keep it. So I'm like, I'm like nervous. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to keep it, all right. I'm thinking, somebody's got to own this. Yeah. And the bunkie says, no, keep. So anyways, to make a long story short with all this, I consider that newer copy with the one at the library the only copy I ever saw the rest of the 8 years I was in prison. So before I left this prison called Belmont to go somewhere else, I got in good with the library woman there, and I was able, the original battered yellow nicotine stain one that she had at the library too, she allowed me to, that's not in my book, okay, I didn't mention that because we don't mention everything in the book, but I was able to, she allowed me to have that, and she more or less says, here, take it. You think you're going to make miracles? So I took it with me. So I still have that original yellow stained, ugly, ugly looking one. So when I transferred on to another prison, I kept that uglier one for making all my notes in and everything. And I kept the cleaner version buried deep in my locker box to just as a backup in case that one would get stolen. Because if they see that you love something in prison, they're going to take it from you. You're not allowed to like anything, have anything you cherish, take from you. So anyways, but after, until I got out, there was never another, and so I would run into, one guy in particular I can mention, remember a PhD who was a prisoner, a PhD in something, that he, whatever he did, and he was this intellectual, always reading Plato and all this kind of stuff. And I asked him, I says, hey, have you ever heard of A Course in Miracles? Oh, no, never heard of it. And, a few other, there's a few intellectual people in prison, and no one seems to have ever heard of it. And I didn't. This was in prison. So, now... I get out of prison and I find out there's a few people writing about it, and some are quite successful at it and some I agree with and a few of them I don't. And but A Course in Miracles really is not a book that you can just read. It's not a religion. It's not a cult. because a cult needs an idol. And there's no idol involved in A Course in Miracles. It's psychological. It's self-psychotherapy. It's about God. It's about Jesus, not the man that walked the earth, but Jesus, the elder brother of us in our mind. It's about Christ consciousness. It's about not Christ, a human being. It's about the Christ mind. It's the consciousness we share. It's the radar that you and I have right now, Julia, as we are connecting with each other. And Shonda, as you're listening, there's no ego involved in this. It's our radar going back and forth. That's Christ consciousness. And the name Christ might offend someone by me talking that way, but it's just a word. And if you want to think about Jesus, who once walked this earth, you know, he was really here, if you want to look at it that way, is that he was here walking the earth to introduce us to Christ consciousness. But back in those days, no one would have understood it the way I'm explaining it to you in this radio show. But Christ consciousness really is the wholeness that we are. And there's a little, if you could take a little segment of that Christ consciousness that thinks in dreams and slips off into a dream, so to speak, just a tiny pinpoint of that consciousness, of that Christ consciousness that slips into a dream of sort or a daydream and thinks it's a human body. And thinks it's separate from that consciousness and projects guilt because it's guilty that it's separate. Well, there is the body that we project of ourselves. We in this world, we are that tiny little part that's separate. But then there's that other part of us that you and I are talking about now and are in sync with each other, is the whole consciousness that we really are. But then we go back to our bodies. But if we can live our lives knowing that, hey, there's something greater than just this body, the Christ consciousness that we all are, that we will eternally be, we're not all going to be here in this body forever. And we all know that. And Dolores has proved that to us. And that's why we're still in touch with her. For those of us that know how to tap into Christ consciousness, you don't have to call it Christ consciousness. You can call it Louise or Katie if you want. It doesn't matter. The word Christ is just is letters in the alphabet. But that Christ consciousness is how we are still connected with Dolores and those, because she is of the whole, so are we, and everyone who has before us, yet to come, we're all a part of the whole. And that's what A Course in Miracles teaches us how to tap into that, which is our real and true abundance. It's what, by me tapping into that, is what allowed me to go forward and bring a publisher to me, Dolores. Or did I come to her? It doesn't matter. It's an extension. And we're all of that same extension. So the right momentum was going and the timing was right when she looked at my typed letter on an old-fashioned typewriter, my well-crafted query with keys skipping and things like that on an old-fashioned typewriter. But responded. It was that something. There was a that either I was drawn to her or I drew her to me, but it was an extension. So that is Christ consciousness, and that's what I write about. But how we can tap into that and get and do what we want to do in life, not what we don't want to do in life.
So it's about the creation process.
That's it, Julia. It's the creation process. Creation is nothing but extension. And we're here in a dream, so to speak, on this earth. Think about it. We're so worried about a nuclear holocaust and And, you know, for example, if someone would push the button right now to end this world, nuclear, blow the Earth up, or a cosmic convulsion, say this huge asteroid came out of the sky and blew the Earth out of the sky, and there's life, it's gone. Well, we would still be living. Life would still be going on. It's not the end of life, but we're here in a dream world. But really what's behind us is the real us, the real us. That's why we're so connected to people like Dolores, who has left and is not here anymore. And so, but if we can understand that, and what we're doing is we're going beyond the errors that we make from that little tiny segment that's separated. Our separation from wholeness is what makes us feel guilty, is what makes us feel fearful, is what makes us feel like, you know, afraid that some guy with an old man in the sky is going to throw a lightning bolt at us and strike us dead. We, you know, the fear of God thing. There's no reason to fear God or whatever you want to call God. I call him God because, you know, that's part of my upbringing. But God, once again, is just a word. But why do we fear God? There's no reason to fear God. Hey, would an all-loving father do anything to harm his children? No. But we are an extension of that all-loving creation. But that all-loving creation is not part of us. We are part of that, but which makes us of that whole.
Right, right. And my mom used to have a saying when people would ask her about hell and things like that, and she'd say, "Now think about it. would a loving father really put his children in an oven if they did something
right.
wrong? I mean, really? And come on.
Think about it. Right. You know, and we say, well, may God strike me dead. Well, come on. And, you know, they say, well, you know, you need to get on your knees and praise the Lord. Well, wait a minute. What do we need? We don't need to praise God, because when you pray, God doesn't have an ego that needs stroked.
Exactly.
I mean, so, you know, it's wholeness. It's conflict free. It's but while we're in this world, we deal with conflict. We all have the ego-based mind as a part of us, because we're a body, and all of us have guilt in us because we're a part of the collective humankind, the collective mankind. We're the collective Eve that picked the apple off the tree and bit into it symbolically, okay? So we're all a part of that in a dream world, so to speak. So really, with all that, you might say, well, hey, it's not a dream world. I'm driving down the road. I got to go to work, pay my bills, all that. Well, sure we do, but you know, it doesn't mean that we have to be afraid to not do what we want to do in life, because we don't have to be afraid of anything. And if you look beyond and keep forgiving, okay, if you look beyond your fear of this and you look beyond your fear of that and keep looking beyond, keep looking beyond that fear to another fear, to the last fear you run into is death. So if you go that far and keep looking beyond, and now all of a sudden you do not have to fear death, hey, all them other fears before that are no longer fears. So now you can go out and do whatever you want to do in this world.
Yep. Well, exactly. Well, you know, and like the with all of our QHHT things, you know, we've had all these past life experiences. I love to do this funny little thing. We've had some other things happen. You know, if we've had traumatic deaths happen, we know things have happened. And I love to do this thing, you know, I've had some traumatic deaths, and I'm always saying, I'm back.
You know? Yeah.
It's just, it doesn't matter.
Right.
So,
it doesn't.
You know?
Well, you know, I mean, it's still, but it does. It shakes us. And just, you know, when your mom left and suddenly passed on, it shook you, people.
Right.
It shook you.
Sure it did.
Of course it does.
Mm-hmm.
Of
absolutely.
Course.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the fear that I'm, what I was trying to say, if the fear Sure, we all fear the death. We're not going to get away from that totally. There's always going to be that fear. But if we can understand it, we minimize it. It's like the cloud cover, okay? You have huge dark skies that are thunderous and tornado-ish looking and all that. But you also have the lighter cloud cover, the overcast, where the sun still comes through. And then you got the clear blue skies. So in this world, we're not always going to have clear blue skies because we're always going to have a little fear. But we can keep the deep, dark, disastrous clouds out of our life with minimizing our fear. So when our time does come to an end and we just may decide that we're going to transition out of this world, if we're lucky to be able to decide that on ourselves, or whenever we're on our deathbed and we're taking our last breath and we consciously know it, it's just one last breath and that's it, and we, you know, transition. So there's nothing to be afraid of. So we worry too much about, if I make this career change, I won't be able to pay the bills and I'll be out on the street. No, because, you know, that's what the world tells you. You're going to be out on the street. No, you're not. You're not going to be out on the street because if you're doing what you want to do, and I can tell you that right now, because when I stepped out of prison, I was stepped out penniless and because I lost everything when I went away. And that's usually what happens to everybody that goes to prison for the length of time that I did. Lost everything material-wise, but hey, it's no big deal. When I walked out of prison, all I had was my journals hugging in my arms. I had my arms around them, hugging them. Wow, I had shackles on my feet because I had to go back to court to be released earlier, but they weren't going to take. I was carrying my journals with me, and so that was my. That was what I have, and that's what I'm working on now. So, even if I had to be on the street, and I would have to do is go somewhere, and there's people that will help and say, hey, you know, this is where I've been, and, will you help me? And people will say, sure, I'll help you. But we're afraid to ask for help. And giving and receiving is what it's all about. And giving and receiving is really one thought. It's the one thought of creation, but it's just different aspects of the same thought. And there's only one true thought. It's called giving and receiving. That's extension. That is creation. So there's no reason for anybody that's listening out there on this show to ever fear going after what it is you really want to go after. And when you're up against, when I was in prison, I knew that at any time now, my life would be over because, in 8 years, I witnessed right up front 7 murders. And, and there was more, but I saw 7 murders. And I was the type of case where they didn't like me because, I wasn't, I was in with murderers and rapists and the serious, serious, serious ones in a state penitentiary, which doesn't have the funds like the federal prisons. And, you know, it was very low budget and double bunks up against each other and just nothing but noise, chaotic, mm-hmm. chaos, violent den of the cell block, I call it, where I was doing all my writing and just... they knew that I had an out date and I was getting out, and I was in mostly with people with life sentences, and they didn't like that. And so that I was going to be getting out someday, and they weren't. And, you know, they may decide that, hey, this guy's not getting out either, and they could, you know, come around and stab you. But thank God that didn't happen to me. But so I was faced every day. So I really had to incorporate into my own self that I'm not afraid of dying. I'm just going to stay in here, and I got to do what I got to do. Hey, if I don't make it out of here, then that's okay. But I did, and one thing led to another. And and the adrenaline, I guess, you, and physically, you could say, just got going, and I was extending myself. There was like a light beaming out of me because I was so thrilled about what I was writing that was moving outwards out of my body, so to speak, and other people caught on to it. But a lot of them didn't like that light. It was too bright for them. And, you know, and that's the collective ego. And that's, you know, where murderers and suicides come from, is because the ego can't handle the light. But there were the ones that I ran into in prison that were doing life sentences that, you know, didn't really need to be there, because they were really not guilty, but they were found guilty by a trial. And, you know, or even some of them were guilty, and you know, now they're just regret what they've done, and they wanted to grab onto the light or be absorbed by the light, their darkness, and they were drawn to me. Very few of them, but, you know, most of them didn't want anything to do with me, but there were few that were drawn to me. And those few, I left behind when I was gone, and I mean, when I left, and they're still there and will be there. But so the light that we are, and when we're doing what we want to do in this world, we are light. If we're not doing what we want to do, we're just in the dark clouds. So when we're doing what we want to do, and we're going after what we want to go after, we're just glowing light, and people want to be attracted to that. And you draw people to you because you're doing what you want to do. Real quick, and a man I just talked to and met at, I'm speaking locally here at AA meetings and NA meetings and at some hospitals. And this guy just got out of the hospital, a little cancer surgery. He's going to be okay. And all he wanted to do was, he was a drummer all his life, and he wanted to, I mean, a really good drummer, and he wanted to be in a band that, he described it like, he wanted to be like Liberty DeVito of Billy Joel's band. Liberty DeVito is Billy Joel's drummer, and I'm a huge Billy Joel fan, really. And so he pulled me aside, and this was like right when I first got out of prison. I started talking to this guy, and I said, just, hey, go after what you want to do. And last week I ran into him, and he says, August 8th, I'm signed with this, and we're going on tour August 8th, and I'm with this great band. He says, we got a tour bus, and we got our own lighting crew, and, you know, the technician crew and everything, where you don't have, in other words, the band members don't have to go set themselves up. They go there, and things are a real good band. That they're touring regionally, but really good, and they're making money, and they contracted him to be their drummer. And I said, my gosh, I said, that's Trevor's his name. I said, that's great, Trevor. And he gave me the CD, the first CD that they got, which this was just, like I said last week, I haven't listened to the CD yet, but see, he's doing what he wants to do, and he turned things around. So, you know, that's what my book is about, is to cut through the anger, cut through the crap in our life, cut through the, go right to our heart, to the spirit that we really are. Come on, we're going to live eternally. We all know that. If you're trying to hide that, then you're just lying to yourself. So just be who you are eternally while you're here in this human condition, and then we'll all connect, and we'll all help each other, and everything's going to be fine.
Absolutely. Well, we're coming close to the end of the show. What's a good way for people to connect with you, Jim, if they want to find you?
Well, people can find me on Facebook, on Twitter. Just look up my name, James Nussbaumer, Nussbaumer. As always, go to Ozark Mountain Publishing Company, my publisher that I'm so grateful for. And you can find me there. I'm also on LinkedIn, jamesnussbaumer.com. Basically, if you want to find me, you'll find me. My book is on sale, Master of Everything, wherever books are sold. And if you really want to order it on the internet, you probably should just go to ozarkmt.com. And you'll go right to it. And of course, you can also go to Amazon too and find it there. So just, you know, look me up, James Nussbaumer, Nussbaumer. I'll return your call or your email or your message on Facebook. Maybe it might take a few days, but I'll get back to you. And so I don't know, Julia, what else do you have to say? Is that good enough? Or
well, we still have like a minute and a half now. How about a parting message?
A parting message?
Yes.
Well, everyone who's listening out there, please, if you're in despair, if you're down in the dumps and you really don't know where you're going, just let go of that fear. Let go of that despair. Try to let go of whatever it is that's bothering you. Just let go of it all and know that you are okay. That you're okay. And there's a thing inside you that I call the Holy Spirit in my book. And you don't have to call it that, but that's your inner natural self. Go there, go within, and talk to your spirit and say, hey, I don't understand what's going on right now. I'm a little upset. Can you please guide me through this or undo this? And trust, and it will be done. And
that's fantastic.
God bless everyone.
Fantastic. Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much, Jim. That was wonderful. And I think we're going to have to wind it up then. All right.
Thanks,
well, thank you so much. Yeah, thanks. Absolutely. And look forward to meeting you. If not before the conference, then definitely then.
And hey,
thank you so much.
Yeah. I can't wait to meet you.